after the concept of counting, our parsha deals with a couple of other topics. I'm going to skip one or two now, and we'll come back to it later. I want to deal with Birchas Kohanim, Duchening. And let's look at the Shumshon Lefol Hirsch's introduction. Moshe was given the mitzvah to instruct the Kohanim that they would have both the privilege and the duty to give bracha to the nation, both during the time of the Mishkan, the Batei Mikdash, and today in Shul. This, he says, does not mean that there is any independent power to confer or withhold brachas by a Kohen. Bracha emanates only from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, who can grant people success, abundance, happening, and happiness. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that he wanted part of our ritual, both in the Beis HaMikdash and in our shul, to include a conduit, a methodology through which HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bracha could be said basically on the people, in front of them, in their presence. And the people would hear the enunciation, right? The comments of a Kodesh Baruch Hu's bracha. We know that we do this after we finish the bracha of Ritzei and after V'chol Achayim. And he says, to emphasize one clearly that if bracha is only the domain of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, it ends with that statement. So if we look at the psukim, it says, "Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe leimor." Hashem said to Moshe, saying, when it says saying, it means he should relate to others. "Daber aron v'yalbon of leimor." I want you to speak to Aaron and his sons, saying, Koi, in this manner, Vorchu es b'nei Yisroel, I want you to bless Yisroel, and then Amoyer Lohem. And Archer will translate that as saying to them. And we're going to, okay, so there's an enunciation. We're going to talk about this word emoyer in a minute. And what it said, Yivarechacha Hashem v'yishmerecha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless you and safeguard you, Yoer Hashem ponav eilecha v'chunecha, Hashem should illuminate his countenance for you and be gracious to you, the people. Yar Hashem pei necho isha Hashem ponav eilecha v'yosem l'cha sholayim. Right? Hashem should lift his countenance to you and establish peace for you. And then we have what Shumshon Lefol said, Lohem, you're going to do that. You're the conduit. But remember, the Samu Eshemi al B'nei Yisroel, what you're doing is you're enunciating my name upon B'nei Yisroel, Va'ani Avorche, and it is I, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, who will bless them. So we see a couple of things here. First of all, the Kohanim were told from the very beginning what their mitzvah was, that they are, you would say, conduits. Somehow they bring the bracha down, through their enunciation, it goes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the people. Rabbi Yisachar Frank looks at the word Omer, which is rarely used. He says it's a different form of using the verb, the form, the vowels, right, to say. And he says, we know that when we look at the bracha that is given, the Kohanim are commanded to give a bracha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us to bless us, Amo Yisroel, the Ahava, with love. And my friend says, hold on. He says, we get brachas on mitzvahs very, very frequently. He says, when we make the bracha, Asher Kedishon V'Savet Tzivonu, Al Netilas Lulav, we don't say, Lulav Shelachem, it's got to be yours. We don't get this further definition of the intricacies involved in the mitzvah. On Shabbos, we don't get Hamoiti Lechem in Haaretz, Alechem Mishneh. And he gives a number of examples like this. And he says, obviously, there's a reason why the word the Ahava was added. Why was love? And he says, I'm going to use another precedent, and I'm going to show you something. He says, we know the word for tefillin in the Torah is taitafos. And we're told from Rashi, it means double, times two or four, the four sides of the tefillin. But he said, what language is it? And it says it is some sort of African dialect. And Refrain says, what? He says, the Torah needs to rely, as he says, on Swahili to explain one of the fundamental mitzvahs in the Torah. And he says, no. And he says, there were certain words that began in Lashon HaKodesh and somehow went to other nations, right? And we bring them back. So when we bring back Taitafos, we're not using Swahili. We're basically putting back into Lashon HaKodesh somehow a word we didn't use. And he says, I want to look at the word Amor. And he says, and he quotes one of the Gedolim. I think the Gadol, he said, was Rav Chaim Lutzato's Talmud Chover. In other words, someone especially, almost on his length, on his level, who learned from him and learned the wisdom. And he says, what he says is, Amor. How do you say love in French? Amour. How do we say French in Italian? Amore. And he said, there are other languages like that. And he says, those words also came, Rob says, came from Hebrew, and we're bringing it back so that the very word Amor in this book adds the fact that Ahava, love, is part of the essential mitzvah, and that's why we use it. And he quotes the Halacha, and Rav Lehrfeld did too, that if a Kohen is going to go up to Ducha, and in the audience is somebody who he really doesn't like, he should sit down and not do chen. A kohen is only allowed to do chen if they're able to say, yes, I want to bestow bracha on every single person in the congregation. And if they can't do it, then they are not allowed. The halacha says they're not allowed to do the Birchas Kohanim. So it's a fascinating aspect in the bracha. But Lehrfeld told a story of Birchas Kohanim, of a shaila that came to Rav Zilberstein. There was in Eretz Yisrael a shul that on one Shabbos only had one kohen, and we know that in Eretz Yisrael they duchen in Shabbos all the time. But this kohen was more interested, and they say in JFK, just for Kiddush. And he, his buddies, would always leave after Shachris Kedusha to have coffee, cake, whatever, whether they drank, I don't know, because if a kohen drinks, he can't do chen, right? And lo and behold, this kohen got caught up, and he didn't make it in. Now, normally in the shul, they had more than one kohen, but Zatresa, that this Shabbos he was the only kohen, he did not show up, and he didn't duchen. Okay, there was no duchening. After they said hayayim, and they're going to say, and they're ready to say kaddish, he walks in, and he says to the gabbai, "I'm back. I can get my aliyah's kohen." And the rabbi goes over and he whispers something to the gabbai. And, okay, the gabbai gets up and he says, Yavav Yoren Yeshia, Ein Kan Koyein, there is no Koyein. And he calls up a Yisrael Bim Kan Koyein. This guy went nuts. He starts screaming at the rabbi, "I'm not Moichel, that's my Aliyah, what are you doing?" Later on, he berates him and he says, "Where do you see in Halacha that if a Kohen doesn't do chen, he can't get an Aliyah?" Right? And he says, "I'm not going to forgive you unless I get a psak from a Gadol that what you did is correct." Okay. Story goes that the Rav said in Hachanami, "Let's go see Rav Zilberstein." And Rav Zilberstein says to the Kohen who is there, "You think this is the first time this has happened in history?" And he pulls out, Rav Lehrfeld said, a number of Svarim with a number of precedents. And each precedent says that a kohen who does not act properly doesn't get the aliyah of kohen. And Rav Zilberstein shows it to them. And Rav Zilberstein says, "What you did was improper. You were mevatel, an entire congregation, from the brachas of Birchas Kohanim. And so basically, you stated to all, I'm not a kohen. I don't got to be there." He says, "Once you make that statement, you are halachically excluded. They don't have to give you anything." And, right? Lehrfeld said, you know, it's not what one would think. One would think that the mitzvah, right, that we have to honor a kohen at all times, right, would seem to trump any desire to discipline, right, this type of kohen. Going back to where we got up to yesterday, HaKadosh Baruch Hu warned Klal Yisrael that you've got the mitzvah, right, to give the Kohanim and the Levites two mice and mice rice. And don't renege. If you're going to renege, there's going to be a problem. Right? And there's a pasuk that says, the pasuk, Ish Kadosh of Lo Yeh, a person's holy things will be his. And we're given the story. It says there was a Jewish landowner whose field normally yielded 1,000 bushels of produce, and he always gave miser. He told his kids that when he's getting older and he felt the near end was coming, be very careful in the shmitzvah, because the only reason that we've had this yield, which I guess was a lot in those days, was because of the meticulous care, right? So the first year, it says, again, they got 1,000, and the kids gave away 100 as required. Okay. The next year, you know what he said? What am I giving away 100 for? Right? These people didn't do anything. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut back. I'm going to keep 100 for myself, and I'll only give 90 to the Kohanim, Levim, etc. And he went ahead the following year and once again seeded and put in the same number of crops, rather the plants. And lo and behold, what did he get? 10 times 90, 900. And he couldn't figure for whatever, right? How did this happen? Never happened before. And so he put it off to things happen. You don't get consistency. And so he said, you know what? I didn't get as much, so I'm only going to give 60 to the Kohen. And next year, when I get back my regular yield, I'll go back to the 90. But again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw to it that even with putting in enough produce for 100, all he got were 10 times 60. Right? And it says this guy was a total option, right? And he kept giving less and less and less until he had a year when he gave 10 and he got 100. And it says, this is what a Kaddish Baruch Hu said. You're going to be chintzy. You're going to get proportionality. You should have had 1,000. Now all you're left with is 100. That's the 100 that should have been Trumas and Maaser. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, this is basically a game that you can't win. A person who withholds Trumas and Maaser is self-destructive. Moreover, the Torah says, if somebody refuses to give the those matnois kahunos, those gifts that a Kodesh Baruch Hu said are there, he is going to have to amend for this avera under unpleasant circumstances. Excuse me. We will end up in a situation where he will be forced to suspect his wife of having committed adultery, and he'll be forced to bring her to the Kohen and have his name plastered all over the place. Oh, come look. Tom Yankel's wife is going through the SOTA procedure, and we're going to come watch. And his name will be infamous, as they say. The story of the SOTA, which is an entire Gemara, is that if somebody suspects that their wife has been unfaithful, they're required, right, to bring her to the Kohen, provided the following occurred. In front of two witnesses, he had told her, "My dear, don't sequester yourself with Henry down the street. Don't do it." And one aide later comes and says, "I saw your better half sequestering herself with Henry. They went into a room, they locked the door, and they were there for enough time to have a good time," whatever that is. And we quote Koheles that a crooked thing, right, cannot be made straight. And adultery is one thing. If committed, the marriage is gone. You can't do anything about it. Stolen money, you can give back. God forbid you try to capture somebody and you know, unlawful imprisonment, you can let them go. However, there are certain things that you cannot undo. Sota means a fool. I mean, somehow it says a ruach shtus, some type of stupidity leading to morality occurred. It also means she turned. Turn away from decency. And it says, a woman who was flirtatious, right? And a woman who basically, especially in those days, when sinius, right? And being private was the mode of the land. If a woman became this, I'm friendly with every guy, I know them all by their first names, they say, asking for problems. Okay. And what happened was when there's Abus that she became a Sota, he has to bring her to the Kohen, right? In the Beis HaMikdash, and it's the Sanhedrin Agadol, the great Sanhedrin, that gets involved. And there's a procedure, which we'll go through probably tomorrow. But before the woman subjects herself to the ultimate test of whether she was unfaithful or not, the Sanhedrin, the judges, say to her, and they say, "Back off. Admit you were guilty. Many times you get a minishtus. We can all become confused. Our yetzer hara can get the best of us, right? Sometimes it's levity. Sometimes you go to a bar and you got carried away." Oh, they give her numerous types of possibilities that may have led to the action. And then they say to her, what the Mishnah calls, they say to her things that she's really not spiritually on a level to be told, but we tell her anyway. We tell her, Reuven did an Aveira when he moved Yaakov's bed. He admitted that Tshuva. Look what happened with Yehuda and Tamar. Right? Yehuda, the king, said, I made a mistake. She's a bigger tzedekes than I am. Right? So, compared to these great people, all of us are mere mortals. You're a mere mortal. Admit your sin. Folly happens. Don't put yourself into a position where you've got to go through a procedure that, if it's finalized and you are in fact someone who's guilty, you will die. And they try to preclude it. The other thing is that because the procedure will involve taking the Shem Hashem, the name of God, right, writing it on a parchment and dissolving it in the potion she's given, we always want to avoid that type of Hashem. Okay. We will pick up with this tomorrow. Thank you.
Yeah.